We're speaking now with Justin Dick. He is a candidate for Sandpoint City Council. Justin, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Chris.
Well, let's start out with information about yourself. Introduce yourself to the voters. A lot of folks probably know you, but a lot may not. So tell us about your background, how long you've been to Sandpoint, any family or community ties you want to mention.
You bet. Again, my name is Justin Dick. I am the owner of Trinity at City Beach. I co-own Jalapeno's Mexican Restaurant on 2nd, and hopefully opening up a third spot on 2nd and Main Street here, although that's going a little bit slower than I would like right now. I do have the building. My wife and I moved up from Denver in 2006. We have a 13-year-old son who attends Sandpoint Middle School, and we have a 9-year-old daughter who attends Washington Elementary School. I've served on the Tourism Council, I believe, since 2010, 2011. I'm also the president of the Bonner General Health Foundation Board. We are the charitable wing for the hospital. I've been involved with the comprehensive plan back in 2009 to about 2011, as well as the City Beach, the Parks and Rec Master Plan, which encompasses City Beach, the Sand Creek redevelopment, the Traverse Park, and what was formerly Memorial Field with the field turf and the renovations that have happened over there. Most of my involvement came around 2009 with the opening of Trinity at City Beach, spending a lot of time here at City Beach and seeing how this park has potentially grown, changed, more people coming to it, what the city is doing for it and those expansions, working with the Carousel of Smiles as well too in terms of public-private partnership. I just really enjoy my time in this community. I think we were very scared to make the decision to move from Denver over here, but we wanted to come up to raise our family. Took a drastic pay cut to get here, but we have loved just about every minute of it. I honestly have only been back to Denver twice since moving up here, and I don't think I would go back anytime soon. Really enjoy the pace of life here.
So, Justin, here's something I'm asking everybody. You're running for city council. How many Sandpoint City Council meetings have you attended for over the, say, the past couple of years?
The past couple of years, I don't know, probably a dozen or so. I've had to get hot and heavy sometimes, depending on what it pertains to the businesses or the developments that where I'm at. City Beach, of course, the Parks Master Plan, Parks and Rec Master Plan has been very big. I've been to some planning and zoning meetings as well, too. I've had a number of customers that have asked me to attend anywhere in terms of like multiplexes being built in their neighborhoods, new developments being in their neighborhoods. So I spent a lot of time here recently, probably within the last 18 months. One of the positive unintended consequences of the shutdown was being able to do these meetings via Zoom as well, too. I think the electronic transfer of information has been fantastic. Nice to be able to go back and attend each of these meetings electronically. And again, quite a few in the early years, 2009 to about 2011, 2012, when the comprehensive master plan was going on as well, too. Excuse me. So that's been my attendance. If I haven't been in person, I try to watch on Zoom Live. If not Zoom Live, I try to watch the YouTube clip of it that the city provides.
Yeah, that's a good bit of information to throw out to city residents. You can always catch these city council meetings via Zoom at your home or watch them afterwards. It's a great way to stay informed. Justin, what are the biggest issues you identify for Sandpoint, the things that are motivating you to run for city council?
I think the biggest one right now is the responsible development. Right now, we see, I think, infill development is kind of the buzz phrase that we keep hearing. We're taking sections of vacant property right now and getting them ready to put housing developments in. One of the things that's been very pertinent to me, especially with working with the Comprehensive Master Plan, is one of the things that we heard from in terms of the communication from our community members was they wanted affordable housing back in 2009, 2010, 2011. That was one of our most generated responses that we've heard. And it takes about a decade or so till those changes come, the code changes come, changes to planning and zoning, and before developers actually start coming to the area to develop within those boundaries. It's been a very slow moving process. Here we are today, it's 2016. Affordable, attainable housing is one of the biggest hot button items that we have right now. I certainly think that we, to provide some historical context, in 2009 to 2012, where we were dealing with our economic downturn, not only in this community, but around the nation, we had lots of affordable housing. There was a number of vacant business storefronts, vacant homes, things that were on the market for over 2 years. I don't think a lot of us had the financial wherewithal, as there weren't a whole lot of jobs in this community. I get worried about developing, infill developing right now and trampling over our comprehensive plan, because it's the sexiest topic that we have in front of us right now, without giving thought to how these decisions may take place, how they may affect the community 10 and even 20 years down the road. We've had a number of great examples of that come by in the last month here, in terms of the North Boyer development, in terms of using a cul-de-sac. It does maximize a lot of the space in terms of what houses we can get into. Comprehensive plan doesn't necessarily say no cul-de-sacs, but transportation modality does change when putting in cul-de-sacs, and there's still a big undeveloped piece of land right behind that property to the west. I think it came aboard before city council to put some pathways for some non-motorized modality that came in that I don't think actually made it into the final vote. And again, that's something that I would have taken a look at and said, you know, I think we probably need to take a look at these pathways now. We have no ability to understand what the actual prices of these houses are going to be. The developer that's working on the project, as well as his consultant, Jeremy Grimm, both fantastic people, both very thoughtful people. But I think in terms of what we've been seeing in our industry and the fluxes in the prices, the fluxes in lumber that we've had, building supplies, in terms of accessibility and distribution of those supplies, it's hard to say what housing in this area is going to be affordable or attainable, or actually market price, which is, you know, the highest that the market can bear at that time. I'd like to see us take some steps to move forward with making sure that if we have to go above and beyond what the comprehensive plan wanted or foresaw, that we also try to balance that with something like great pathways for modality to access several different cul-de-sacs, if that's what then becomes developed in those areas. So I'd say that's number one. The 1% sales tax, the Parks Master Plan has been near and dear to my heart, not just because my business is here, but I've been, I don't want to say I'm an expert, but I've probably been down on this property in terms of City Beach where I'm doing this interview. Just about more than anybody in the course of the last 13 years, just in terms of how much I have to be at the restaurant, how much I enjoy being at the restaurant, watching and seeing this lovely asset. I mean, this is the most beautiful asset that Sandpoint has, with the exception of its other couple of parks in the Sand Creek portion of Memorial Field. And we only use it approximately 4 to 5 months out of the year. Those are the summer months. The water goes up. We have seen a need in terms of being able to use this property year round, which I think the master plan will lend itself to. It gives another affordable option for Sandpointonians as well as our tourists to come down without having to. And we love Schweitzer, and I'm not running them down. They've been a wonderful community partner for as long as I've been here. But we need to find some more affordable options for our locals and our tourists to get out to that are based within the Sandpoint city boundaries as well too. And I think that really overlaps on living wage as well as affordable housing. We really need to shorten our shoulder seasons in this community. We've had some bear of a shoulder season of September. September's weather turns out to be very much like it has been the last couple of weeks, and we get rain on the weekends. The soccer tournament just came into town. That's the Pondere Cup. That's historically been a fantastic moneymaker, as well as anecdotally, the folks that are traveling, you know, within a 250-mile radius of Sandpoint to get here, they love coming to this trip. They love coming to this tournament. They love spending time and money in Sandpoint, visiting the downtown retailers, the restaurants, walking around, using the field. If we have that 1% tax, they will be the ones that end up paying, I believe, the lion's share of the tax during our busy tourist months. We just have to, I can tell you right now, I've got a family of four. And, you know, my dreams of coming to Sandpoint and using the lake and using the mountain were crushed almost instantly by 2007, just knowing what it takes to actually work here. You know, we took a drastic pay cut from Denver to get here, but the dividends that will be paid later to us by raising a family in this community, being able to walk to school, being able to walk across the street and go view to over to Lakeview Park and Memorial Field, having access to Memorial Field 7 days a week, with the exception of the sports that go on there or the festival that goes on there, has really been made a wonderful impact on our family as well as our pocketbook too. We've just seen here with over at Lakeview Park, there's a basketball court over by the boat launch on the south side there. I was probably one of three people that ever shot hoops there regularly. You have one hoop that was like at 9 foot. The other one was at 11 feet. It was very challenging to play over there. One of the things we saw, just a small little improvement by the city, they painted the pickleball courts on there and they left the lockbox out with the nets and rackets and all that good stuff. And to see the vibrance of this new found community, this pickleball community, spending time there on the regular. Again, it's a very cheap date for us locals. It's welcoming to tourists as well that want to come from other communities that are doing these types of things, and gives us an opportunity to shorten those shoulder seasons, excuse me, not have to lay off staff, or we get plenty of staff that get ready to leave for Schweitzer, and they usually take from October until whenever it snows off. But we got to find a way to pay these guys and continue to pay them and pay them competitively, especially in the food and beverage industry and the retail industry. Some of the challenge we were facing a lot of challenges pre COVID 2019. It's been very challenging to find employees. It's been very challenging to find housing for employees. You know, we have to be a better job as small business owners and figuring out how we can up our pay to our employees and somehow figure out, whether it's through the city or through private public partnerships or through just the private sector itself, finding different ways to house these folks. And we're working on a number of ideas with other business owners now in terms of like a local rental pool, who's going to be coming up, whose leases are coming up, who can live with each other, who's got a vehicle and transportation to be able to, you know, if you need to come from Trestle Creek every day, is your transportation going to be able to get you here through some of our crazy winter months as well. And, you know, I'm not necessarily a big proponent that the city is a developer, that the city is a landlord. We need to certainly look for opportunities as to where we can build and who we can work with. I think there's a number of local developers. I know most of them are busy right now, but a way to spread that money around our community, find the spots that we can put housing on it. And we certainly, when we start talking about rent controlled and subsidized housing, I think it's a trick bag that all of us business owners, small business owners, have gotten into before, where we work like heck to get one of our great employees into a rent controlled property. They stay there, you know, as a small business owner in this community, we really want to bring our people up through the ranks, right? We want them to be here. They want to be in Sandpoint. As soon as we bring them up through the ranks, they take more responsibility. They work extra hours for us. We also pay them more. Just a slight modification in compensation can get them booted out of those rent-controlled properties. And then we're looking at this huge gap between where the rent control is and what's affordable. And we need to figure out how we can bridge the gap between those two.
Okay. Well, you rolled it back into housing, which of course is maybe the number one issue here. But just to clarify on the local option tax, you're in
Oh,
favor of
yes, I am in favor. And let me go back to that. I apologize. I started. It's challenging because each of these topics overlaps so much with, especially within our wonderful little community that we have, and based upon our geographic location to one another. The 1% tax, the first time that we went around, again, some historical contacts, we were contacted by somebody who was on city council at the time, and they were looking at some ideas on how to bring this tax forward. And this was going to fund the revision or the expansion of Memorial Field at the time. One of the ways it got brought to us was we were going to do a per drink tax for those people who had liquor licenses. So because the state controls the liquor licenses, there's so many per capita, it unfairly punishes a group of purchasers and a group of suppliers as well. I thought the fairest thing for the entire community was the additional 1% retail tax. As a small business owner, I was terrified. I didn't know whether we should eat the tax, if we should bump our prices up. We finally, towards the end of it, just said, let's just run it. We have spoke with all of our staff about it, what it goes for, how it's going to be collected, where it gets turned in. We really did not have any opposition to it, at least in terms of our customers. And I think that's is something to speak about, because we get up to 1,000 customers a day between June and Labor Day. Most of that's from our tourists. Our tourists are coming in from areas where they're paying anywhere from 9 to 13% tax, depending on where you're looking at the heat map on where our tourists are coming from. Certainly, it's an extra burden to the locals, but I think paying the 1% sales tax now, and as we did back for the memorial, we've already seen memorials paying off. The ROI is already coming in. We already had a lacrosse tournament that came in mid-June, I believe, to June 2021. We're here for almost 2 weeks, and we saw the hotels benefit, that the retail benefited, the food and beverage industry benefited. And these are a lot of the folks that we're dealing with right now in terms of finding them attainable housing. Now, you've got other folks like Cochava, you've got the Lighthouses of the world as well, that are also looking for attainable housing, but we're also talking on a larger compensation scale as well, too. Again, the more people that you bring to this community, the more people that love this community, the more people that you're going to find to add to the fabric of this community. And I think that's been my experience these last 16 years. It's just really building on our community members. Community stewardship is huge, huge, huge. I'm huge in terms of my support for all the nonprofits in this community. We have a very, very strong network of nonprofits. The last 18 months with the shutdown of COVID, we've all been able to lean on each other to figure out best practices moving forward in a virtual world, how to raise money, how to run multiple campaigns, how to work together, which I think is fantastic. And I think that's where we're seeing a lot of the success there. With those strong nonprofit bonds that we have in our community, as we get new members that have moved in, typically they're a very anonymous volunteer in the likes of Denver, Seattle, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York. You know, the only reason they know you is because you're wearing a name tag and they say, Justin K, you're working phone lines today. Where you come here, you can be one of 20 people that's part of a nonprofit and move mountains and raise amazing funds and bring wonderful people out of their shell and get them involved in this community. And I think that's one thing that we do best.
And we have a great group of nonprofit community organizations here that do a ton for our town. So anybody that's listening that wants to get involved, they're always looking for help as well. And it is, Absolutely. As you say, part of the fabric of the community. Okay, we have two minutes. And I want to ask one more question, and then we can say goodbye. But generally speaking, do you feel the city council and the mayor have been taking the city in the right direction at present? Anything you do differently?
I I'll go back to some of the development stuff that I've seen. I probably pull out a few more questions. I was just watching the last planning and zoning meeting, and Jason Welker had some comments. I would say I could feel his disappointment a little bit in terms of where they were at, their recommendations, moving it to city council. Also understand where the city council is because of the way the community is calling for affordable and attainable housing. I think sometimes we're looking at it and we hear those cries from the community and we make decisions to get homes, to get developing here. Again, who knows what this community and our nation is going to look like in 3 to 4 to 5 years in terms of an economic downturn. We've been riding extremely high here for the last 5, 6 years. That will come to an end at some point in time. I think the bigger thing right now is the city. We don't want to rubber stamp everything that city and city staff is doing, but I think they're working in a direction for our future, for our change, and to handle the growth that we're dealing with right now. And I feel like we're already playing from behind a bit. Again, we know what the comprehensive plan looked like, and we know it back in 2010, we knew what the community needed then. Government can be very, very slow moving in terms of how it acts and then how the community reacts to what those changes may be.
Justin Dick, I want to say thanks again for talking with us. How will people be able to get more information about you? Do you have a Facebook or website?
Yeah, I'm just going to put my email on right now. As I made a last minute decision to get in here, I was hoping to do it 2 years from now, but you know, opportunity presented itself. My email address is j.dick. That's D as in David, I-C-K, at Mac, M as in Michael, A as in Apple, C as in cat.com. You can always reach me via cell phone, 208-610-8979. If I don't pick up, it's usually because I'm at work. Leave me a text message and I will do my best to get back to you. Hey, thanks a lot, Chris. I appreciate it.